Geography, a domain of endless explorations of landscapes and environments across the Earth's surface, presents a plethora of interesting career paths. GIS, a derivative of this space, lays with tech as a fast-rising domain. In this episode, we sit with Kwame, who took an opportunity in his GIS class to start his journey in tech and has risen into a managerial position. His story is an inspiring case of pivoting careers, and he shares great tips of how to get started. Enjoy today's episode. This episode is brought to you by Big Spark. Big Spark is the UK's fastest growing data solutions consultancy, translating your business needs into data architecture, strategy, and engineering. Together with their technical partners, they focus on swift and efficient business value delivery. Taking an innovative approach to every challenge, Big Spark is an agile team of over 100 world-class engineers and data scientists pushing the boundaries of what can be achieved with AI, data, software, cloud, and machine learning. To find out how Big Spark can ignite your data solution, visit us at www.bigspark.dev. Big Spark, igniting change through engineering. So hello everyone, welcome to the TechSelf podcast where we navigate today's tech wave one electrifying conversation at a time. I am your host Raymond Cluche, and today I have an old friend who has, you know, risen very well in his career, and I just want to have him on board to, you know, discuss it a little bit further to inspire people who are aspiring to do something similar or who are in this space who are not really sure about how to begin. So without further ado, I would like Kwame to, you know, introduce himself and we can get into today's conversation. So Kwame, thanks so much for joining the TechSelf podcast, and over to you.
All right. Thank you, Raymond. So thank you so much for, the opportunity. I think this would be my second podcast. The first one was a couple of years ago after I worked on the COVID dashboard and, you know, I got the opportunity to be on a podcast. So thank you so much. And I think this is really cool. Hopefully into this conversation, you tell me more about, how it's going and, what the inspiration was and everything.
Right.
All right. So let me speak a bit about myself. So my full name is Kwame Edumenu. I currently work at MTN Ghana as the manager for analytics and reporting. So MTN is the largest telecommunication company in Ghana. It's really huge, so much that it's even a problem. The government has to step in and try and, you know, curtail its growth and all of that. But yeah, I've been here for a year. It's been really interesting. First of all, because I'm coming from competition. So I used to work at Vodafone Ghana. And you know, when you work at Vodafone, MTN is like, you know,
rival.
Your nemesis, exactly. Like you hate them because, they're doing so well. You wake up every morning at Vodafone and you're just trying to find a way to sort of, you know, get back some of that market share. So yes, I've been at MTN for a year now. I work in the digital division. So I'm basically responsible for all their data analytics, mm-hmm. reporting, anything that has to do with data sets with me. So as I mentioned, I previously worked at Vodafone Ghana. There I worked as an analyst within our analytics team. So that was also a very huge role because it basically meant meeting the needs of the entire business with regards to data analytics. So building churn models, building complicated Tableau dashboards, sentiment analysis for the marketing team.
Right.
Working on smart CapEx models for the network team. So they want to put up a cell site. So you need to help them determine what's the most profitable location. So you need to consider a lot of factors before, you know, telling them go to, A or B or C. So it was a huge role. I think that was my first time picking up, you know, an analytics role. And it was a very good learning experience. And I think that's the foundation for my current role as a manager, because I got to work on so many projects. Like it was, every day was just a new thing. And yeah, I mean, my journey to Vodafone was also an interesting one because I got in as a graduate executive. So you know how they do youth management training programs. And yeah, and before that, I was a teaching assistant. So I mean, I think I actually missed the application deadline for the Vodafone training. Yeah, I did. So I mean, I saw it and I called my colleagues and I was like, guys, did you know about this? And they were like, like forget about it. It's difficult to get in. Like you need to write so many exams. And I don't know, for some reason, I just decided to. So even though the application had ended, I could still put in my CV and apply. And I just did that. And a couple of weeks later, I got the invitation to take an assessment. So I did that. Those annoying aptitude tests where you have to do, logical reasoning and all of those annoying stuff. So I mean, I passed that stage, then I got to the assessment center. So the assessment, this is a story that, I mean, I like to tell. It was difficult. Like you get people from so many places, very accomplished people. Some people even schooled outside the country. And I mean, so you come together, there are so many tests in one day. You need to do an interview, you need to do a case study and so many things. And I mean, by God's grace, I made it. I mean, I got into Vodafone on the program. So I think that's where the journey started, and that's where my growth really started. And I mean, I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Every time I talk about it, it was a very good starting point for me. And yeah, so from there to analytics in Vodafone and now a manager at MTN. It's been a very good journey and I mean, it's been awesome, and I'm always grateful to God for that. Yeah.
I like that. I think, honestly, when w so we both went to University of Ghana, for those who are listening, we're both in the same Christian Fellowship, Noobs, so shout out to all the Noobs people listening. And I've always known Kwame to be a very quiet guy. He doesn't really talk too much. You're in the choir. Kwame would just do what he has to do, and he just goes, to his little corner. Then all of a sudden, I see that you are, honestly, I didn't know you were in the data space, or I didn't even know anything about, you even having any form of tech background. I didn't even know what you were studying in Lagos, to be honest. I didn't really know. So it was, for me, it was like, oh wow, Kwame is actually in the space, and you're not like just doing baby stuff, you are doing very huge stuff. So just to backtrack a little bit, like, what ignited this, data analytics journey, or amongst all things you could have chosen to do, why did you go down this analytics path?
Yeah. So, I mean, I always wanted to do something IT related. So when I got into uni, I did geography, right? And that wasn't really IT related. So what I did was, I mean, you mentioned a Christian fellowship, and because of the work that I had to do there, sometimes I had to stay up late nights. And the interesting thing that happened was I developed insomnia. So that meant I couldn't sleep at night because I had to do a lot of work during the day. And it was a bit funny because if you work so much, you should be able to sleep, but then I wasn't able to. So then I decided to learn programming languages. So I started with C++. It was crazy difficult because I wasn't a computer science student. But I think I just kept working at it. I kept watching videos and all of that. So even before AI, people were talking about artificial intelligence and all of that, I was watching videos on it. And back then, it made no sense because it wasn't huge then, right? So in level 300, that's when I took a course in remote sensing and geographic information systems. So yeah, so for those of you that don't know, it has to do with data analytics, right? So remote sensing, you pick satellite images and then you train the images based on either the pixels or any other attributes. So once you train it, you can either do a supervised classification or unsupervised. So that's what it started from. So when I learned all of that, I was like, this is really interesting. Like, I've never seen anything like this before. So then when I got into GIS, that's when I started learning SQL, database management systems, and all of that. So by the time I was done with school, I think I had developed a really strong passion for data analytics. And then I obviously got the opportunity to be a teaching assistant at my department. So yeah, so I spent that whole year teaching GIS and remote sensing. So that meant having to learn, database systems and then translate that to the students, data visualization, and all of that. So within that 1 year, I really learned a lot. Like it was. I think I worked every day of the week. So Monday to Sunday, I was always at the lab, either learning or teaching or doing something. It was a very stressful year.
Wow.
Yeah, so that was the foundation. So by the time I got to Vodafone, my SQL was pretty strong. So it was a very good foundation for me. I had a very good understanding of telling stories with data. So it was a very smooth transition. Yeah. So I mean, that's how it started, and that's
nice. Great. So for those listening who may not necessarily, you know, have an initial tech background, like maybe most of us traditionally went to read IT, computer engineering, computer science, and so forth. Kwame was literally, you know, a geography student, but then he tapped into the opportunity that he had during his GIS class, and then he's now working as a manager. So we'll delve more into that, but it's just a quick one for anyone who is thinking about, you know, pivoting careers, to understand that it is possible. You just need to, like he did, strategically, you know, position himself for the opportunities. Okay, that's great. So I think your story is a unique one, because one would say, okay, yeah, so I just, like, when we all go to uni, I'm just going to just do what I do for my undergrad, and after I'll try and find a job. But then strategically, you chose to pivot into a whole different space. You put in the work and all that, and that is very good. Now let's delve a little bit more into what you're currently doing as a data analytics manager. If you can, you know, run us, you know, through an overview of what your work entails on a daily or a weekly.
Okay, yeah. Sure. Yeah, that's cool. So, I mean, obviously, again, I like saying obviously. So, obviously, I love my work. People see it. So, even at work, like, they don't understand how I'm able to get so much done in a very short time. And it's because I love it. It's amazing, right? And the reason why it's amazing is because when people have to come to you to take decisions, I think that's a very powerful position to be in. So, what I basically do is the general overview, analytics and reporting for my division, and it's an entire division. So that means the basics. When you talk about data visualization, having to build reporting dashboards for all our products and services. And obviously, before you build these dashboards, you need to make sure, you know, your data engineering is done and done well. So right. I also build data mats. I work with the BI team to develop new tables. So that's what I do. So visualization, reporting, which is like a lot of the work, right? So Right. Yeah, having to create new tables. And then in addition to that, obviously, if you have tables, you need to ensure the data quality as well. So tracking the consistency, accuracy, and all of that. So that's something I do on a daily basis. And I'm sure you know this, that is an annoying part of the job, because you can set up very
garbage in, garbage out. The jargon is garbage in, garbage out. And people tend to, you know, every time they talk about, you know, I'm a data scientist, I work in data and everything, they all just think about the fancy bit, you know, the feature engineering, you create a model, you throw in some data into random forest, you know, decision tree and everything. And after you have some metrics, then you know, then you spew out some nice, either 0 or 1 to say yes or no and all that. But the work that goes into, you know, getting that data into a particular, you know, format, and then training the model, and also scaling your training, because, you know, sometimes you're training on a small machine, and also data, you know, preparation, the distribution, is it realistic of, you know, data, like data preparation stage is the real data science. Yes. So for those who want to get into data space, it's not just a fancy
I don't know if you saw this meme. So you know this Barbie and Oppenheimer movie. So
there was
this funny meme where, I mean, the background is Oppenheimer, but then what you see is Barbie. Was really funny. I mean, I don't know if you're gonna ask me this later, but I think that would be one of my biggest challenges. Like data quality, it's really frustrating. So you can set up everything working well, but then you can have system issues and all of that. Yeah, so that's the part of it. So another key thing is also insights, right? So we don't want to only be churning out, you know, our results from your models or building dashboards, but we want insights that, you know, drive business decisions, right?
Right.
So we want to be able to say, because I did ABC, or I did this analysis, or I built this model, it has led to this particular product and service. So that's another key thing that I sort of manage or work on. And it's a bit difficult, because then if you have to do all of these other things, and then you now need to sit down and see how you can direct the team's, you know, progress, it's also another key thing, right? Another aspect is, so what we've done recently is we've released a new version of MyMTN.
Right.
So MyMTN is a mobile app that helps customers, you know, self-service apps, anything that you need to do with MyMTN, they manage
right.
So what we are doing with that is the data, we are using Google Cloud as the, you know, storage, processing, and all of that. Yeah, so that's what we are doing. So I manage our Google Cloud service. Exactly. Right. So all the data engineering that happens there is what I manage it. And what we've also done is we are pushing that data into our on-premise system as well, so that we'll be able to sort of get more insights. So what do you do on the network, not just in the app, you're able to get that insight as well. It helps us with customer segmentation and profiling as well. Right. So that's the other bits that I manage as well. So also recently working with the team in SA to build ML models for our users. So recommendation, product recommendation as well. So yeah, so it's a lot. It's not easy, but I mean, if you have a passion for it, you're always looking for.
I feel you.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that would be the operational bit of it. There's also, I wouldn't call it administrative, but so budgeting for the team, also impact execution. So what we do is for any campaign or any activity that you want to do, you need to set targets and metrics for it. So why are you doing this campaign? What is it going to bring to the business? So I sort of help teams set those targets as well. We set these realistic targets and then we track them, you know, as and when we need to, so that we can report on progress. So yeah, that's about it. And the millions of ad hoc reports that you need to generate, both internally and for group as well. You can be sitting there and then group sends a whole bucket list. Hey, Kwame, I need, you know, like 10 rows of data with different. So it's just, yeah. So that covers it for me. Yeah.
Right. On the back of, you know, talking about data quality, I was watching an AI conference. This lady who used to work at Google, Cassie Kosikov, I believe I got her name right. So Cassie was making an analogy about how AI systems can be, you know, described in the form of creating, you know, a favorite dish or a recipe. And she was like, no matter how well you know the processes of creating a dish, if you have spoiled ingredients into your, you know, like in your bowl, no matter how much of the process you follow and whatsoever, what you get at the end of the day is going to be junk.
Exactly.
It's the same way with, you know, AI systems and all the hype and everything that goes on in there. Yeah. So it's pretty much, so data quality, like you were linking that to how data quality is a non-trivial task. It's a very hard task. A lot of companies, a lot of researchers go into this area, so it's quite a pressing need in the world today.
Hello there, tech surfers. I have got some news for you. The Tech Surf podcast is now on Instagram and LinkedIn. Follow us on Instagram at the Tech Surf podcast and LinkedIn, the Tech Surf podcast, to stay up to date on new episodes and to get interactive. Don't forget to like, share, and send us feedback on your favorite episodes and the lessons you've learned. See you soon.
So let's talk a little bit about, you know, data analytics management, right? You've delved into it, into all the things you do. How does one become, you know, a data analytics manager? Like, did you just see the role and know that, okay, this was good for me, or you were planning, you were pivoting, you were building your career towards some possible form of management in the future?
Yeah. So truth, I didn't even want to apply for this role. That's the truth. So I was only 4 years into my analyst role, just 4 years into my career. And then, so I saw the role and then I ignored it because, hey, it's manager for analytics and reporting. Mm. And I wasn't a manager at Vodafone, I was just an analyst. Mm. So a couple of days passed, and then, I mean, one colleague at Vodafone sends it to me and it's like, hey, this looks like something that you could do. And I'm still like, I still don't think it's time yet. I think maybe down the future. So it wasn't until another colleague forwarded to me till I realized that maybe I need to pay more attention to this. So yeah, so it was on the second recommendation that I decided to just put in the application. And I honestly wasn't looking forward to an interview, nothing of that sort. Right. Until, I mean, I got the opportunity to interview. The interview was really interesting because I think the question that they gave me, there was an issue with it. But I was very confused. I was like, should I tell them there's an issue? But I think I just did. I told them that, hey, I think there's something wrong with this. And then they acknowledged that there was an issue. And even through the interview, I was just smiling. One person asked me, why are you smiling so much? I don't know the answer that I gave, but I think I was just so comfortable because everything just made sense. Like every question I had an answer or a story or an experience for. So reflecting back on it, I think even though I didn't think I was ready, I actually had put in the work, and that's what made the whole interview process smooth. So I think I reflected on it some time back, and what I realized was the fact that when I was at Vodafone, I started this thing where I started a Scrum team for data analytics, right? So it was something that hadn't happened before. We were working with group on a couple of projects, and I felt there wasn't really structure or organization. So what I did was I stepped in as sort of a team lead. So just to coordinate our meetings, so stand-up meetings every day. And then when we come, I assign tasks, hey, you do this, and then we come back, we review it, and then we see where we are. And then one time, for some reason, I just got so inspired. I put together a whole deck on how to run projects in an agile way and what that means for us, comparing it to what we've done previously. I ran through the whole deck and everybody was like, this is so cool. I think we should really adopt and work on this. And people would call me after the meeting and be like, wow, Kwame, I didn't think we could apply agile and data analytics and all of that. So I think that's where the leadership started from, having to coordinate all of that. So when we are done, we have an MVP and then we present it to management. They give us feedback, we go back, and then we work on it. So I think that's where it started from. I didn't realize I was building the leadership management stuff. I think that's what made the MTN interview process and everything so smooth. Yeah.
That's nice. That's nice. So give me your top five. If anyone should stop you randomly on the road, a young bloke, a young man who is also reading geography, and say, I want to be like you one day. Give me the five major skills or the five main skills that one needs to have to be able to become a data analytics manager.
Okay, so I think I would break them down into, I mean, soft and hard skills. So obviously you need a combination of both. So for hard skills, I mean, so I met a lot of people and I have a checklist that I send to them. So obviously you need to learn to be good with statistics. Not the best, but you need to understand, I mean, basic statistics. It's not something that you can run away from. I mean, if you want to do data analytics, it has to be something that you're concerned with. I also recommend telling stories with data. So people don't really pay attention to this, but it's quite a key skill that I've realized in mentoring people, right? So you can have the data, but it's what you do with it that matters. We all have access to data, but how do you tell your stories with the data? I think it's a skill that people need to learn, and it's something that I push to all the people that I mentor. So one thing that I even do with them is I give them data sets and then I give them the opportunity to explore. What do you see in this data? What are the patterns? How do you communicate these patterns to, let's say, senior management? What would you want them to do with the information that you have? For soft skills, data analytics management, you need to have excellent stakeholder management. Like that's is a must-have skill. So that's one thing that I realized when I was leading the Scrum team at Vodafone, right? Because there are different people with different sort of temperaments, and you need to know how to manage each and every one of them. Some people are very good with a very basic example. Some people are very good with phone calls. You call them, they'll pick up. You send them a message, they'll never reply you. Right. So if you don't understand the person that way, you always be frustrated sending them messages because he's not going to reply. So you need to learn and say that, hey, this guy responds to phone calls better. Right. Another thing that I realized was also communication. So it sounds very basic, but I mean, obviously it goes hand in hand with stakeholder management, right? How do you communicate information to people? How do you speak to people about certain topics, right? I think how you communicate obviously elevates you as well in the eyes of people. And that's something that I saw at Vodafone and I also see at MTN now. People respond better to me because I don't have one way of communicating because I know how people react differently. Some people are very strong-willed. So if you come in strong, you're never going to get anything done, right? So you need to take things, approach it differently. You can't have one way of doing things. And I guess the last skill that I'll probably give to people is just to be curious. Like, just have a lot of curiosity. Like, just try things. Don't be afraid to fail. Because you speak to people like, I haven't done it because what if I don't get it done well? Just fail a lot. You're always at home on your own. That's where you fail. When I was learning C++, I was embarrassing because I wasn't getting a lot of stuff. I remember I learned Java 2 and it was like, I don't get this. But then I'm on my own. I'm embarrassing myself. Nobody sees me. Get all of that out of the way. And the more you do it, the more familiar you get with it. And then it becomes easier. So, so many things that you can do. But I think these ones would help anyone get far, in any industry.
Wow, you are a wealth of wisdom, Kwame. I've always known you to be a very quiet person. I know that in that quiet state, you're always, munching on some very good knowledge.
I like to hear things quietly.
That's nice. That's good. Okay, so let's delve a little bit into, today's tech space, AI, blah, blah, blah. Everyone is talking about AI. I think if you go on social media and you don't see something.ai, then probably you are not living in today's social media world. Yeah. I just want to know how has AI changed the way you work or the way you view work, you personally, not necessarily as your organization, but on a personal level, how has AI changed the way you view your daily work?
Okay. So, I script a lot. I write a lot of scripts on a daily basis, right? And I've never really had anyone to go to, hey, how can I do this differently? Is there a smarter way? And then ChatGPT happens. And for the last, I don't know how many months now, it's like I'm talking to a friend, right? So if sometimes I come up with the basics of the script and then I put it in there and then ChatGPT changes or something. And I'm like, nah, this doesn't look right. Maybe it's a different database. What if I'm looking at PrestoDB? How would you have to script this? And then it comes back with scripts specifically for PrestoDB. Sometimes I try it out, it doesn't work out. I put the feedback in and then it regenerates a new output. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes I get frustrated. I'm like, bro, you're not helping me out here. It's been fun. It's been an interesting way to work because I've never had that before. And it's definitely elevated the way I work, the way I think. It's helped me work faster. And I think even internally, that's something that we're trying to push our digital team. So what are the ways that you can work with AI that you previously couldn't before? I think there are a lot of opportunities there that we are trying to explore as well. So it's been an eye-opener. It's been an excellent learning process for me. And I think I'm elevating that journey further because, like you said, AI is everywhere. And that's what... Yeah, and I think MTN is also a very good organization in terms of learning and development. So there are lots of opportunities. So you guys watch out maybe in the next 6 months. I might be coming up with, the next big thing in AI.
Oh, wow. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm learning really hard now.
We're looking forward to it. Just a little bit of, you know, a teaser, or maybe a little bit of, you know, what it is like working in MTN. I'm just thinking out loud for someone who may have some form of interest to work in MTN. This is no ad for MTN, though. This is just a personal conversation between Kwame and me. But what kind of roles would someone possibly look at, or possibly will someone possibly occupy in a tech space if they find themselves working at MTN? Maybe 5, 10.
Okay.
Not necessarily breaking them down, but maybe just naming them and maybe a little summary of each if you can.
Okay, cool. So, I mean, as you know, telco is one of the largest industries, and it's very diverse. So, like, you can do literally anything and everything in telco, right? So in my team, for example, digital, there are so many interesting roles. We have an API marketplace that we are. So I don't know if you heard about it, Chinosis. So it's an API marketplace where developers can either leverage APIs available or develop APIs and market them through that channel as well.
Right.
So you can have role as a product manager for Chinosis at MTN.
Right.
Within the tech space, so many roles. If you want a role in data, you could work in ITBI as a data engineer, database administrator. If you want to work in software engineering, you can software developer. If you want to work in cloud, which we are heavy on right now, you could, you know, get a role as a cloud architect or, you know, associate, or if you want to do data in cloud as well. Those are all roles that are available. Obviously security as well. So if you have a passion for IT security,
right,
obviously you need to take the certifications, get yourself ready, but we have roles in that field as well. So I mean, anything IT related, MTN covers it. And because the telco, and we do a lot, it covers so many things. We even have our mobile money side as well. So if you're into fintech, I mean, yeah, those are all opportunities available to you as well. Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. Okay, so let's get away from all these techie conversations. And what do you do to wind down? You know, I know you play the guitar, or you play the keyboard, one of them, or you used to play, but you still play. Yeah. But let's just get a little bit personal. You know, what do you do? Because managing a team is a lot, let's be honest. And even getting you this Saturday, I'm sure probably you have a few plans, but I've stolen 2 hours to just try and get you here. What do you do to, you know, relax? How do you balance your life overall?
Okay. So, I mean, I don't know if it's sad, but even what I do to relax sounds a bit like work. I'm currently reading a book, Data Literacy for... I got the title of Data for Better Lives. That's it. So it's a World Bank book. It was given to me by one of our senior managers, Ameli.
Okay.
And I mean, it sounds like work, but I'm actually enjoying it. Like, it's so I like reading. So if it's not as I was reading Thinking for a Change, John Maxwell.
Right.
I found that book insightful as well. So I like reading. The Data for Better Lives is one that I'm reading now, and I think it's really cool. There's some very interesting ideas on how to look at data. Right. If we treat it like a resource, will that change people's mindsets about it and how we approach it? And yeah, I watch movies. Everybody watches movies, but I love watching movies as well. I love series. I'm watching One Piece now. It's on Netflix. I think, there's a buzz around it now. Because usually when they do adaptations like that, it doesn't turn out well. And I love football. I watch a lot of football. And I used to play a lot of Football Manager on my laptop, even at work, because I used to love it, managing football. But I mean, life has gotten very busy now.
Adulting is adulting.
Exactly, I have it on my laptop now. I'm looking at it right now, but after my opening. I love football as well. I watch a lot of football on weekends, Premier League. Obviously, the best team around. I don't think I need to say it. People can just guess it.
Well, I'm not so much of a football guy, so those who are championing whichever team it is, we'll just leave it as is, so that we don't have any chaos in the comment section.
Another thing, I don't know if. So I mentor a lot of people, and I don't know if it's a hobby, but I think it's something that I do. It takes a lot of my time, a lot of my free time. So I think it's something I like to talk about as well. So it wasn't until recently that I reflected and realized that I am really helping people, and it's cool. Like, it's very cool. I've been on a journey with 4 students, and it's been 9 months now, and they're all going to graduate soon. And when I did that reflection, I was like, boy, like, every week meeting them, I never missed a call, speaking to them on their projects, giving them advice, telling them what I do at MTN, how
that... Charlie, Kwame, will you mentor me?
Yeah, why not? For 9 good months, I was like, and I never missed a call. One time I was at a work dinner, I stepped out to have a call with a student. That was so, I mean... Yeah, I like to talk about it.
I am gonna sign up for Kwame's mentorship. I need some of these brilliant ideas in my life.
I don't know how it happened. Like, okay, for the 4 students, that was because of Springboard. Okay. But outside of that, so even when I got to MTN, it was like people were waiting for me to
automatically become a mentor.
Exactly.
I think it's just that thing, you know. Naturally, some people just reflect leadership. I also mentor people. I have currently officially. I have 4 people I'm also mentoring, 1 in France, 2 in Ghana, 1 in Nigeria. Okay. It was until recently I actually took it a step further, tried to, you know, create a specific plan, put it in my schedule and everything. But prior, it was very much, you know, some of them, one I went to church with, so he's been I've seen him grow into a man, so he's an economist, in the making, so I'm trying to connect him with people that I know in this space that can help him, you know, accelerate his career. But all the other 3 just shot their shots at me on LinkedIn, you know, they liked me, they liked the way I present myself, blah, blah, blah. And I am a product of you know, people holding my hand to get to where I am. Honestly, get tech for me was very hard. I may not have spoken about it a lot. People may have seen me to be a brainy, but I struggled when I was in uni because I didn't really like my tech. I wanted to either become a pilot, become a lawyer, become a singer. I had so many things going on. You get it. But when I finished school, still being, you know, confused about what to do whatsoever, I had people help my hand who were able to, you know, direct me, encourage me and everything. I made a few mistakes, a lot of mistakes actually. But seeing how those mistakes were permitted, I was around very brainy people, but then they allowed me to make the most foolish of mistakes. I'm sure I used to work on this mobile app. You probably used to write that activity. Like, for example, instead of using a fragment, I'll be using an activity for those who know Android development. I was just messing things up, but then having, you know, shout out to Thomas, to Fitzgerald, and to Saeed. I really respect those guys. They really help, you know, create an environment for me. So I naturally also mentor people unconsciously. Recently, I've made it more conscious. So I think it's just that natural thing when people just see you have a specific, you know, knack towards excellence, towards like your work ethic. Like, I have these mentees on a few projects, including this podcast I'm working on, and the way I'm putting them on like deadlines, you know, preparing everything, they're so not really used to this kind of thing. But I keep telling them that if you're able to inculcate this into your personal life, trust me, you will be very different. You, like, wherever you go, they will just see you as a different person because you have this approach to life that is very unique. I can ramble for a long time about this mentorship thing, but it's really beneficial. It is really beneficial. So anyone who wants to be mentored by Kwame, you know, just reach out. I don't know the recruitment process, but I'm sure he has his own rules and regulations that you have to observe, because I have had a few bad mentoring stories, but we will leave that for another episode of a podcast. But then I realized you didn't speak about music. What happened to the music part?
So, I mean, I don't want to say life happened, but, you know, after school, I think, I sort of took a break. So it was just, you know, regular church going. And then after a while, I think I just felt this drive to get back to what I used to do. So I started playing at the main church, going for rehearsal. And I think I found it a bit frustrating. So rehearsal was supposed to start at 2 or 3. I get there like 1:30 or 2, and rehearsal ends up starting at 4 or 5. So, I mean, I used to speak to the MD about it, like, what can we do about this? Because it seems to be a norm, like, I mean, take it or leave it. It will come at 4 or 5. Like, there's nothing you can do. So I think after a while, so I had a friend, a lead guitarist that I used to go with. He was a good friend. So when he left the church, I sort of drifted away. I went to the U Chapel to play for a bit, and then after a while, I just stopped playing. Yeah. So
well.
So I have my keyboard. I have the Keswell just at the foot of my bed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So just to keep me playing, but playing in church, maybe.
Well, as your former music director in quotes, who saddened by this news, you know, I will encourage you. I know church dynamics can be a bit different to navigate, but
I mean, I'll go back.
Maybe. You should. Next time I have you on the podcast, maybe we're talking about you now moving from manager to director in data analytics.
Thank you.
I want to see that growth in the music part a little.
Definitely.
Okay. Let's still delve a little bit more into, you say you like reading and everything. Is there any creative part of you that we don't know of? Because I know you to be Kwame the musician until recently. You've put it on close to your bed, and I know you now as Kwame, as the mentor, you know, as all that. Is there any other creative parts that people don't really know about? Do you ride? Do you cook? Do you like skiing in Ghana? No, but I don't know, maybe hiking, kayaking. Is there any creative part of you that you would love people to know about?
So I do write. But a lot of people don't know about this, right? So I do write sometimes about random stuff, sometimes about something specific that I'm going to, but a lot of people don't know about this. It's a bit personal. I don't like to you know, talk about it a lot. But yeah, I think that's one thing that I do. It wasn't until recently that I found out that I wasn't born to paint. So I went paint.
It was terrible.
I went painting with the team, and gosh, I was
horrifying.
I need to find a painting and throw it. I mean, we took it back to the office, and people were just so. I have one of my team members did a very good job. So what people tell me is, if they don't see my team members painting, then mine is fine. But the moment they put it together, they're like, Kwame, what happened? So I mean, I guess it's not for me, but the writing, sure, that's one thing that I do. And I love music a lot, even though I don't have the time now. I really love it a lot. I did a lot of that even in Motown. I even worked on the sheet music, so it was for a choir competition. Yeah, I thought I was gonna be a professional pianist. That was my ambition.
Okay. Well, me, at least I thought I was going to become a professional musician at a point, which I still can do because I still, now I produce, I sing, I do all that. So, and I play as well. I know it's quite a lot that has happened over the period of time.
Wow.
So I still can, but it's just a matter of life happening. We need to have to see how.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not easy.
At all. And I don't know how our parents did it, but shout out to our parents for keeping the fort high, because I'd be almost, I almost want to always throw in the towel sometimes, but I don't have that luxury option. Let's just talk a little bit. Sure. Okay. Sure. You wanted to.
I want to talk about the organization and staff and.
Oh, sure. Go for it.
So I still help David. You know, David has his yearly program.
Yeah.
So it's very hard. Like, I try my best to help him. So getting the video production sorted.
Right.
Now I'm getting it. So we do that every year, and we are even planning. He sent me a couple of voice notes that I need to listen to. So I try and do that every year. Just to support
them, That's nice. Let's touch on the topic that people don't realize talk about, especially in Ghana, that's remuneration. I don't need to give me any figures necessarily, but over the course of your career, you know, how would you say, you don't necessarily need to give figures, but how would you say overall remuneration in this area for someone who is about starting or someone who is even at your level now? Is for people to, you know, have a more objective view of what they're getting themselves into and not necessarily be projecting into unrealistic, you know, expectations. Okay.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, I have been blessed, I would say, to work at multinationals like Vodafone and MTN. So obviously they would pay higher than most organizations were.
Right.
So it's been okay. It's been good. Like if you're comparing it to what other people are doing in the country, MTN is also good. So apart from the pay, the benefits, and you know all the other additional stuff makes it even better. So
right.
Yeah, it's been good. It's been okay. I actually did I think it was an article a couple of years ago when I was at Vodafone on how much tech people earn. Yeah, I think it's on LinkedIn. Back then,
you can send the link here that we can tag it in the link for people to, because people don't like to talk about money in Ghana.
Exactly.
Because the way Europe and UK people are very open about the question of, you know, how much do you earn? Because you can go like you know what someone in Goldman Sachs earns, you know what someone in Google earns.
Even to the role, sometimes when the role is put, you see the salary.
Exactly, exactly. But then for African, because of Ghana, for some reason, the topic about money is a bit touchy, you know, and because probably people are afraid once they say, okay, I earn NK. This or like X amount of Ghana cedis, then the family members, the cousins, the friends that you haven't heard from for a long time will start, you know, reaching out and saying they're just checking up on you, and then start, you know, I understand.
So I don't like to do that. I don't even like to give a range when friends ask. Because the moment you do that, then they put you in a particular bracket.
Very
tight. Like, hey, so that's families true. Earning. Whoa.
That's true. That's true. And I mean, people have to respect, because even though I know what some friends are earning here in the UK, abroad and everything, you respect boundaries. It's not. It's not that, like, someone is earning a six figure and then automatically every project idea you have, I'm going to this six figure brother. You don't know what he has to deal with. Maybe student loans.
Like, people have other stuff. People just assume your salary, that's it. Like, you're supposed to have all of that. But
exactly. And even most of the time, when taxes, you know, like when tax gets involved, then you realize that. Let's talk about tax. The tax is for another day. It's for another day. But yeah, so, okay, that's nice. So you would say the role for the organization you're working in, for someone who's about to start, is a comfortable salary for whatever level you are at, and you will be relatively comfortable in Ghana.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
We about ending. I'm actually sad. I wish I could do this for 3 hours, because I didn't think it was going to be this fun talking to you, but I'm really enjoying it. But just so you know, get close to the end of today's episode. What advice would you give to young professionals who are starting, especially in our current, you know, tech climate? I'm trying to target it more to people in Ghana who are maybe aspiring to do something similar like you did. Not that I'm excluding others from other countries who may be listening, but trying to, you know, give some specific advice to, okay, let me rephrase that. Let's give some advice to young professionals in the data space. Then you can tailor it to specific people in Ghana based on our context. Yeah.
Okay. So one key advice that I would give is your development is key. Like, that's just like, for me, within a space of 1 or 2 years, I had completed 4 nano degrees and done like 27 data science projects. I'll do my work, I'll do excellently, but my development mattered to me more than anything else. So even adding this on top of the work that I was doing was crazy. But right now, a lot of these data science projects become very easy to me. And that's why people don't understand how I'm able to do a lot, even at my current workplace, because I've done it over and over and over again.
So you know the process.
Exactly. So that's one key advice. Like, any learning opportunity, right now there are so many scholarships. ALX is always giving out something. Google Cloud is always... I've done a Google Cloud program, I think, twice, and I was a mentor for the third year. There's so much going on. You can even take one day just to look for these opportunities. You can even space them out. Sometimes they come in specific periods of the year. So if you know January, this will come, you plan for it. And just learn, develop yourself, build yourself up. And not just the hard skills, but the soft skills as well.
Right.
Communication, stakeholder management, how to understand people's temperaments and all of that. So don't just focus on, you know, the hard skills, but the soft skills as well. And I think one other thing is always keep abreast with the new stuff that's going on. We'll always be, have the attitude, like have a learning attitude, be always open to learning new stuff. And if you can set alerts, I don't know whether it's on Google, subscribe to, is it TechCrunch or whatever it is. Just keep yourself updated and find a mentor is really important. Like whatever it is that you want to do, find a mentor in that particular space. Your mentor is not supposed to be chasing you. You're supposed to be chasing your mentor.
Can you reiterate that, please, for those in the back side of the congregation? Yeah. Can you just say that a bit louder for those at the back?
And I don't worry too much if, let's say, a mentee gives up after one or two tries, because then I know you're not, sorry, but you're not really serious. If you really want to go, you will keep fighting, you will keep chasing your mentor, you keep following up because you know what you're going to get from them and you're not going to stop till you get that particular thing. So find a mentor and it's your project, it's your, I mean, the onus is on you to chase them, follow up. When you meet them, have a plan. This is what I'm doing. What do you think about this? Like, just be willing to learn and then have a mentor to guide you in that space as well. I think if you do that, I mean, you don't just need to look at roles here in Ghana. There are so many roles that you can apply to. Remote roles, I think, are doing magic for a lot of people now in our country. If you get a remote role, it's a very good opportunity for you, not just, I mean, salary-wise, but also exposure as well. So, I mean, that would be my advice. And, I mean, never give up. Always keep, you know, hope alive. People have done it before. So I have one mentee right now who wasn't really good with computers. Right now he's working with Tableau and Power BI and writing SQL and stuff, all in a space of 9 months. So I think that's a very good use case for me now. So anybody that comes to me, that's the motivation for you. If someone, I think he's old, never good with computer, he wasn't born into the computer age, but he's been able to, you know, commit himself to this, and now I can call him a data analyst because he's been with me for 9 months and he's going to graduate from the program soon. So,
all right. Okay. That's fine. Okay. So let's conclude. What are you looking forward to in this, you know, data space, tech space? What are some of the things you're looking forward to in the, like in a few years to come?
Yeah. So I think right now there are so many people that, you know, learning, for a couple of years now, you see people doing a lot of programs in data analytics. And reaching out for mentorship. I think the learning is still ongoing, but what we need now are opportunities for these guys to be able to practice everything that they're learning. So they need to have, that's something that I'm hoping I'll be able to support with, but then it's not easy because you know how these large organizations work, headcount and all of that. But that's one thing that I'm looking forward to. If there can be some sort of program or opportunity for people that learn data analytics, how they're able to apply it, if they can work on specific projects, some of the projects that these organizations are working on. I think that's one thing that would be really helpful. I also don't see a lot of startups in AI or analytics in not just Ghana, but across Africa. That's something that I look out for. So maybe it's something that I need to do myself. But yeah, that's one thing that I'm looking out for. How can we leverage data and, you know, scale it up such that it becomes, you know, we have a startup like that in the country that's supporting businesses. Like how we outsource some of our things to other opcos. You have a software engineering team in, you know, India or somewhere. Can we have a data analytics team or company that is helping companies generate insights, building ML models, scaling it up, you know, like how IBM did with their IBM Watson. So they built IBM Watson and now it's generating a lot of revenue for them. ChatGPT is doing that. So, Ghana, let's do something. Yeah.
Well, Ghana, arise, Ghana, youth for your country. Kwame, thank you so much. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. And I want to say kudos to you for, you know, pivoting careers and making it work, and it's one of the things I'm, you know, trying to champion in with my podcast. So you were going to ask the question, but you didn't ask, but then I'll just use it to summarize. But my goal is, you know, to, you know, try and demystify some of these tech concepts. You know, every time tech is spoken of, you know, like we had this conversation, someone who is not a techie can still listen to it and still learn a thing or two. Yeah. And also a techie can also understand. So a lot of the time people want to start in tech, they don't really know where to begin and all that. And unfortunately too, sometimes the resources available to people in Ghana, Africa may not always be, you know, very helpful. So I, you know, having my experience from abroad and trying to see people who have been able to do it and navigate their way through, just get all these conversations on board, encourage people, and, you know, make tech more accessible and make people enjoy what they're doing more. So thank you so much. I really enjoyed this, and I'm looking forward to the next jump in your career, data right. analytics director.
Who knows?
Maybe founder, CEO. Yeah. CEO. Let's just go for it. Let's get to the top. But thank you so much for coming, Kwame.
Thank you so much, everyone. This was fun. And thank you so much. You're doing a really good job. I keep listening, and I'm sure I'm going to learn so much from you. So, well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pivoting can be very daunting, but with a strategy, discipline, and effective mentorship, Kwame reminds us that it is possible. There is a lot of information out there, and it is your duty to find the best fit for you and get started on your journey. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the TechStuff Podcast. See you in the next episode.